Podcast. It is Wednesday, September the 11th. I was going to do my typical open, but at first I wanted to make sure that I recognize the men and women, first responders of the United States of America, firefighters, police officers, the military. As you know, 18 years ago, and it is really tough to believe that it's already been 18 years, the United States was attacked in New York City as well as in Washington, D.C., and as well as the fields of Pennsylvania. And the attacks were horrific by airline and hijacking, and something I wanted to at least make sure that I mention. It's a day that I will never forget, and if you live in the United States, it's likely that you'll never forget it either. So it's tough to try and pivot and make a transition out of that, but I wanted to start by reminding you that this podcast is brought to you by Yabla. So Yabla is a language learning software, and normally I do kind of the typical pitch, but I went and actually, I was searching for independent reviews of this. So Trustpilot.com is a place where you can get a lot of research done around companies or products, and Yabla actually has 2,460 reviews on this site, and it's got a 4.4 out of 5 stars. So I was browsing some of the initial reviews, but I thought I would share a couple of these reviews with you. So this is from a user named Neil. So a new language can be a long and difficult journey. However, in my opinion, Yabla has made that route a little straighter and with less hills to climb. I've used Yabla for more than 9 years now, and I have found the site to be an invaluable aid to my continuing French studies. I have only one suggestion that I can think of that may need improvement. That is to provide some sort of table of conjugated verbs in their various tenses, or maybe conjugation as part of the section of games. Apart from that, I recommend Yabla to anyone who will listen. Scroll down a couple more, and 5 out of 5 stars from Jay Viviano. Found it last. I've been looking for several years for a good source of videos designed to help my Spanish comprehension. So far, this seems to be a great resource for that. The website works pretty well. Quite a variety of topics and levels to choose from, and I very much like the option to filter on Latin America versus Spain-originated videos, and I feel that the price is just right. No complaints here. So head on over, Yabla, Yabla.com. If you go into the show notes and you click on the link that's provided there, it's going to let Yabla know that you got referred from this podcast. So if you're hearing about Yabla from this podcast, make sure you go and use that link. The other thing I wanted to do was a big shout out from or to the patrons of the show, patreon.com/ The Mind and Fitness Podcast. Patreon is a place for creators, people that do podcasts or internet radio shows or YouTube shows, really anything in the creative space. And it's an opportunity for people that listen and get value out of this to make some kind of a monetary couple bucks in the tip jar, if you will. So I always like giving a shout out to people that are contributing and contributing regularly, have contributed, things like that. So Christina, Holly, Ross, Caroline, Julie, Casey, Alyssa, Brian, Sarah, Adrian, Stan, Kristen, Sarah, Helen, Arnie, Barb, and Kim. So if you like the podcast, if you're getting value from this, consider going to patreon.com/ The Mind and Fitness Podcast. If you have an internet-based business, could be a really good idea. Last month, this podcast did just over 12,000 listens around the world. This month, it's on pace to do a little bit more than that. And so you could be a part of something really, really special and help keeping this podcast on the air for free. So this week, it's a live in person, and it's with my buddy Brad Gunning, who actually co-leads a TMS Facebook forum group with me. And we go about an hour and a half. So this open's going to be super short. Wanted to make sure I talked about Yabla, mentioned September 11th, talked about the patrons of the show. If you want to support the show and you don't feel like putting some dollars in the tip jar, going to Yabla, leaving an iTunes review is honestly one of the best things that you can do. If you don't use iTunes or an Apple device, you can go to Facebook, click write recommendation or write a recommendation on the Facebook page. That'll take you there as well. So without further ado, Brad and I dive into a ton of topics. I think we answered like 50 questions from the Facebook group. So there's going to be a lot thrown at you here, but I think you're going to really enjoy it. Take care. I don't know if I'm going to use it or not.
No, that's fine. That's what you did with Mike Murray, right? You just started recording and then like, because it started in the middle of like,
it was what I was doing when I first started. So that show, Pardon the Interruption on ESPN.
Yeah.
You heard of that? So it was probably, I don't know, 10 years ago or so, this trend in sports radio and in sports television was that they would do these live, like it'd be like the commercials, you know, like a 3-minute commercial.
Right.
and a minute into it, they would have this live look into the studio. Okay. And so sometimes they'd come back from commercial and Tony and Mike would be mid-sentence on something, and that was just kind of the rage at the time. Sometimes the stuff that I talked to Schubiner for 15 minutes before we started recording,
yeah.
but there was so much gold in there that I was like, God, why did I hit the record button?
Just hit the record button.
Right. So, but there was the point when I had asked him about the University of Colorado Boulder study with fMRIs and stuff, where I was like, can we talk about some of that stuff? And he had revealed a little bit, but none of it's published. So he didn't want it in there.
Okay.
So.
All right. That's fair. That's reasonable. I get it.
Your mic's too far away from your face.
I like the Joe Rogan approach.
What's that? See, I've literally never listened.
You've
to
never him. Watched Joe Rogan. You're missing out.
It's too long. It's a daily that's like 3 hours long.
Well, yeah. So Joe Rogan's podcast will go like up to 3 hours, sometimes longer, and it's really just him and whoever the subject is, guest, not the subject, whatever. They're just talking. It's pretty unformed, and depending on who shows up is going to determine how much structure there is to it and whether or not they do any drugs beforehand.
it's really
popular.
Well, the only one that I've even pseudo-watched, and it was just literally the clip, was the one with the Tesla guy.
Oh, Elon Musk.
Yeah, right. When he was on there made a big old stink. And
that guy.
That's why you drove a BMW over here.
Well, no, it's a friend of mine is a big car guy, and he, we were talking about the new Porsche electric vehicle, the Taycan, I guess that's how they pronounce it, and how it outdoes Tesla and everything, and he hates Tesla.
Wait, the Tekken, like the video game?
No. I think it's spelled Taycan. Oh, the Taycan.
Not even close.
It's a 4-door Porsche, so you know, only kind of a Porsche.
Well, I'm a motorcycle guy.
Yeah.
I've got a pair of them. Brad Gutting's here. I don't know how much of that I'm going to air, but Brad and I did a show together around Christmas, and I went to his place in Seattle proper, and now he's up in the suburbs about 15 miles north of Seattle in a town called Edmonds, which is where I live. So in the coldest, we're in the garage right now, and the weather's very nice. It's very warm, and I'm wearing a sweatshirt because I thought I would be cold, which I'm not yet. It's in a destroyed garage right now with kid shit everywhere and boxes and all that stuff. But we're looking out in this cul-de-sac out here. So there's 8 houses and there's 14 little kids that live here.
Wow.
So it's a really good environment for...
This is such the polar opposite of downtown Seattle, where it's like crammed with people who don't look at each other or talk to each other.
Right. So here, most of the time what happens is about 4:30, 5 o'clock, 4 or 5 of the houses' front doors will be open, and the dogs are running around, and the kids are running around, and the adults are sitting in the driveways and talking.
So healthy.
Right. So it's really nice. I used to talk about it a lot on the podcast last summer because we'd be out. And I remember I think I said something about the kids in one of the houses. Because they were really irritating me.
Yeah.
But then it started to become a joke, like, better watch out what you say in the cul-de-sac because you'll end up on Eddie's podcast.
And you will. And then that kid will wind up repressing anger about the comment that you made.
On the podcast.
And then they'll be on the forum.
Right. And we don't
in
want
20 years.
Yeah, no, we don't want any of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so Brad and I, originally this was going to be kind of like we're just sort of shooting the shit. But when I posted and said, hey, Brad and I are going to do a podcast together, I'm looking at it now, there was 57 comments in it. So I feel like this SD card has an hour and 32 minutes. I will be getting up at 5:30 tomorrow to go to the gym.
Okay.
I can't believe that I've been running today as hard as I have. So get this. I'm not saying that my life is hard or that my day is too crammed or all that stuff. My wife's got a major presentation and things she's doing for work. My mother-in-law got in a bad car accident yesterday. I sent you the picture. She's okay, but she's kind of in a little bit of a zone right now.
Yeah.
And so the alarm went off this morning at 5:30. And last night, Jenny sent me a text at 5 o'clock, said Sheila's in a really bad accident. And Jenny ended up getting home about 1:30 in the morning. I was completely asleep. But I woke up at 5:30, go to the gym, come home, got ready, left the house by 7:30. Drove up to Bellingham. So for those of you who are not around the area, it's about 80 miles north. Had 3 sales meetings. Worked a little bit at the Whole Foods that was up there. Got back down south around 4. Recorded the intro for the Howard Schubiner episode. Went and picked the kids up from school. brought them back here, played a little bit in the front yard, made dinner for both of them, gave them both a bath, put them both to bed. So, like, I've been up now at this point. It's been 15 hours, and I have not stopped. There wasn't even a lunch break that was in there. So, I'm a little fried, but...
Yeah, it takes some grit. My biggest challenge is a cat.
Yeah. Well, when I went in there to get a jacket, my cat was all over me because she didn't have one kibble left in her dish.
And we do the wet food thing, so...
Well, so that's what the dogs get. So they get a little dry and a little wet food. But one of them has diabetes, and so I give them 2 injections a day. So the cat, thankfully, she's been... pretty much healthy, except for when she ate a rodent that had some kind of a disease a few years ago and almost got herself killed. But
I applaud her for catching the rodent.
She goes in these phases where there was a couple of years ago where she brought in like mice like 9 nights in a row.
That's awesome.
Sometimes alive, sometimes dead. I know that it's supposed to be a sign of endearment with felines when they do that.
Yeah, but it means they trust you.
Well, I don't do the live catching. My wife does that. I'll clean up the dead, and I'll clean up the organs of the dead. But I don't. I just can't catch a live one. I'm afraid of it running on my foot and that feeling of those little, little feet.
Yeah.
Okay. So, 57 comments. I'll be the one to read these off.
Okay.
And then we can talk about them.
Okay.
So the first one. First comment was actually from Brad. Brad, why are you such a prick sometimes?
I'm such a prick.
And this actually got 13 reactions.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, it did get one love, which was from Michelle Dyer. So thanks for that.
Thanks, Michelle.
Two thumbs up, Donna and Lisa, and then everybody else was a laughing emoji.
Yeah,
so, and actually the next person said, I'd love to hear you address that.
Yeah, why are you?
Did your anger help or hurt your healing process?
Did my anger help or hurt the healing process? That is, I think that's a fantastic question. I don't quite know where to start with it though. I wish I'd asked her a little bit more follow up on what she might have meant by that, because I think my response to that was like, it was a little bit of both. So, when we talk about TMS, the uncomfortable thing, at least for me with it, was acknowledging that I was repressing anger. And I always thought that I was pretty overt about how I express my anger about things. When I go back to when I was a kid, my mom has these memories of me getting really, really furious about something and like throwing Hot Wheels and toy cars and that sort of things when I would get super upset. And she said that I've always kind of had a hot temper. So the challenge that I ran into with TMS recovery in regards to my anger was being able to acknowledge that it was a thing that I was repressing. I think that's something I talked about in the last show that we did, was that for the longest time I just resisted getting into it in the first place at all.
So here's something I like your take on is Rachel Bartolini, who's a listener, like something. But so define repression for me. What is it? Because again, there's this in the Dr. Sarno lecture DVD that you used to be able to find on YouTube, and I actually downloaded it before it was taken down. But there's a guy in there, and they're all actors, but there's a guy in there that says, how could I be repressing? I'm angry all the time.
Right.
So talk about the distinction between what is repression if you're throwing Hot Wheels? You know what I mean?
Right. Well, certainly, I guess when you're a kid, you're probably not repressing at all. You're just going purely on instinct and reaction, responding. In my notes that I prepared for this, one of the things we've talked about on the group before is that anger can wind up being a distraction in its own right. And when you're really overtly angry, think about what you're channeling that into. I've seen a lot of people on Facebook, for instance, who are extremely angry about political situations and also have fibro, for instance. And it's like, and they channel a lot of anger overtly and with a lot of profanity and other colorful commentary online, and then they've got fibro, and I'm like, well, fibro is definitely like apex TMS in a way. So it's like, what sort of anger are they repressing? It's hard to know exactly what it is that you're repressing, but I think that a lot of those what you're manifesting is when you're angry all the time and you're showing that anger off and you're expressing and exerting that anger very directly and very vehemently, frequently that's in order to cover up something that you find to be completely unacceptable to be angry about. And that's a really fine difference. It's really easy to be upset about politics in general, whatever side of the spectrum that you happen to be on. You can be very angry about that. And everybody accepts that. So that's really easy. And so you can really double down on that. And you can go really, really far with how furious you are about things. But that very well might be covering up feelings of anger towards, let's see, yourself, your parents, your kids, Those are some pretty popular ones. Some of those inescapable relationships, those relationships that you're born into or that you're directly responsible
you mean
for.
Like, you mean like two daughters and a wife and a mother-in-law living?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, sure. And that's very unacceptable feeling. You know, it feels really unacceptable to be really upset about that, right? My girlfriend, Shauna, who commented on one of the, I think on this post.
Yeah, first I saw
today.
It. I just thought this person was just being funny. And then I was like, oh, wait, never mind.
They live together.
I know who she is.
Right, yeah. And she wanted to talk about shadow self types of things, which goes back to Carl Jung. And she loved the movie Us. I love the movie Us. And that's very much a shadow self type of movie, if anybody's seen it. And shadow self is... I think the best way to talk about shadow self is it's the part of you that is like the most evil, selfish version. And how in touch with that do you want to get? Well, probably not very. And you could feel very angry about the fact that you have these urges, that you have this desire to be that selfish, or that you have desire to do harm, or that you have desire to say cruel, mean things to people. You might really, really want to do that, and you might have some internal conflict about that. When we talk about shadow self, we've talked about, like, are you getting dark enough when you're doing your journaling, when you're meditating? And it's difficult to talk about going into the dark side of things because that is, by definition, extraordinarily unpleasant and, again, unacceptable.
Well, those the Purge movies sort of put that stuff on display.
Yeah, they
well.
Put that on. Yeah, it's the purpose of that movie, right?
And my take on this has kind of evolved a little bit. I did a episode, I don't know, it was maybe 13 months ago, and the graphic for it was... It was a shitty movie, well, the worst superhero movie yet, but the trailer was great for Venom.
Yeah, Venom. Yeah.
And so it was Tom Hardy turning into Venom, and the title of the podcast is You Need to Go Deeper. And it was basically, it's kind of like the Two-Face concept, like allowing yourself to be Harvey Two-Face as opposed to just being Harvey Dent,
right.
As an example. And so, but I've evolved a little bit on this because for a long time I was of the belief that I need to, and I think this is what Dan Buglio is talking about when he says journaling didn't work for him because he was sort of reliving the experience over and over again.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean, because the opposite of repression is not expression. The opposite of repression is experiencing. But if you're writing and you're reliving the story, if you're not really feeling it, and Jim Prusak's a big, he talks a lot about a feeling being something that you actually tangibly feel in your
These
gut, body. Like if I'm at a great sporting event, like I remember 2007, Ken Griffey Jr. had been away from the Mariners for 7 or 8 years, had not stepped foot back in the stadium. And the Reds came to town and it was his first time ever being back there. And he came out and he gave this great speech and I had these goosebumps and chills all over my body, right? That is a feeling that I had.
Right.
And so it works the exact same way with feelings of anger, feelings of whatever. But to me, like repression is now, as you're an adult, because of conditioning, you now have this automatic response where it's like you may feel this anger in your chest or in your face or like this red rage, but that's not appropriate. And so it's just like, I'll put it away.
And certainly what's not, what frequently feels so inappropriate about it is the factor itself, the event or the situation scenario itself that's making you feel that angry. And then what's also so unacceptable feeling is the intensity with which you might otherwise have that emotion.
Right. And like furthermore, the furnace made me change my my thought on that. Okay, well, let's go to the next one. So Jennifer says, looking forward to the pod for sure. Thanks for recording it. I look forward to this podcast every week. I'm still dealing with some symptoms, but I'm doing the right things. And your podcast is helping. That's not really a question. She said, I'm really focusing on the emotions when I feel like my symptoms spike, which is great. I'm also finding a balance of resting when necessary and pushing through symptoms to show my body I'm okay and that I am strong. Exercise for me really empowers me to feel like my body is fine. I would love to hear your personal story about how you dissolve symptoms and what you're doing to deal with emotions yourself. I'm going to start. So for me, as far as being able to find a balance of when resting is necessary, for me, it's not necessarily the rest that I find myself needing or that I find myself craving. Mm-hmm. Most of the time for me, it's finding better balance in my life. And so it's like if my wife has been working a lot lately or working late a lot lately, oftentimes after a couple of weeks of that, she'll get a text from me that's like, I got to go out with my buddies or I got to go ride my motorcycle all day. Like, I just need a break from the stuff that goes on in these walls and in the house.
Right.
Because as somebody who's a sales consultant who works in the field, the only people really that I see are the people I'm selling to. So that's a contentious relationship from the moment it starts, from the moment I walk in the door of their office. And then my kids and my wife. And so that's it. There's no other human contact.
Right.
And so to be able to have some of that stuff, whether it's going to play golf or being on the motorcycles and talking in the comm units for hours with my buddies, like just something. So that's a way that I keep, certainly keep it that way. As far as the being able to still deal with emotions myself, I think it's, I'm still a big believer in having some kind of a daily practice.
Yeah.
Some people have a really hard time finding that. Sitting down and writing stories in a journal was not helpful for me. Yeah. Never really was. What was more, and I've praised him a lot, and a lot of people really don't like him, but the Adam Heller approach, which is just over and over and over asking yourself how are you feeling?
How are you feeling?
And it's a, I feel angry, period. Not I feel angry because of this or because of that. It's just I feel angry, period. And when people will say to me, I'll get emails that say, oh, you talk about Adam Heller all the time, and I think he's such a jerk, and he's a, you know, he's a ShamWow salesman and all the, you know, whatever. And I just say, here's the they're like, I tried it 20 times and it didn't work. And so I did actually the math on it. And I brought this up last week is that in a 15 minute session, which is usually what I'll do, 15 minutes of just asking myself, if I'll put it on the laptop, which a lot of times I will, I'll just say, Eddie, what are you feeling right now? Or how are you feeling? And then I would type out I would just say, I'm feeling angry. You know, so then I do a control F for find, and I type feel, and oftentimes it's going to be 130 to 170 times in 15 minutes. So if you do that for 15 days, let's say, you've now asked yourself how you're feeling close to 3,000 times, which is likely more than you've done your entire life combined.
Probably.
So
almost assuredly, actually.
So that's me in terms of dealing with emotions. What I find is like I'll be really good about it for a couple weeks. I won't have an ounce of pain for a couple of weeks, and then I'll stop, which is not what I should be doing because I stop entirely.
Yeah.
But I think a good practice would be something like that, 15 minutes. And then also right when I lay down and go to bed, it's sort of like, that's what I'm doing is I'm falling asleep, is like just kind of envisioning what am I feeling right now? What am I feeling right now? Until I fall asleep.
Yeah,
it actually puts me to sleep really fast.
It's interesting. I do that most nights. And so most nights I tend to fall asleep pretty quickly. Is that before I go to bed, lay down, and then I just sort of review the day. Keep it pretty specific to the past however many waking hours and just go.
So not waking decades?
Not generally. Now and then. Now and then, though.
You're far away.
Sort of, it depends on what comes up. Sometimes there something comes to mind that happened when I was a teenager, and I want to reflect on it, and maybe I haven't ruminated on that a little bit in a while, and I want to do that. So I might take the time to do that. Shauna and I talk pretty openly, so you know we're both TMS people.
Yeah. So how did she? What's her connection? Is it just you?
I think that she had heard about TMS from another friend of hers who randomly discovered Sarno, and that was around the time that we first met, when I was sort of coming out of back pain and getting into it. And I think she was getting into it in the same way. She picked it up a lot faster than I did. And she had been doing a lot of the physical treatments, you know, chiropractor and acupuncture, I think. And she was like, oh, I didn't really have to worry about putting a stop to any of that stuff because I read the books and it seemed to click and it made sense and the symptoms alleviated. And so I didn't feel the need to go anymore. And one thing that I've been talking that I mentioned pretty frequently lately is I was like, how much physical treatment are you doing? When was the last time you did it? Be honest. And you know, there are a number of people who they went to a physical therapist, they went to one of the random holistic types of treatment things. Acupuncture is probably a very popular one. And every single time I say, yeah, you got to stop that. I don't know if I want to stop that. I don't blame you for not wanting to stop that. You do that and it tends to create a response that's positive that seems like it would reinforce itself over and over again. And so if you just kept doing it, maybe that if you did the physical treatments along with the emotional work, then the combination of those two, well, that's really going to solve it. The problem is that's absolutely not going to solve it. When you continue to do the physical treatments, you reinforce the notion that the pain that you have is a physical thing, that it's related to some sort of tissue damage, and it's not. And it's really important to accept that as a baseline, that if you suffered an acute injury, if it's been 3 months, that acute injury has healed. It's gone. So the pain that persists is tied to something else, and it's tied to repressed rage.
You know, Schubiner, actually, I usually will hold pretty consistent that it's 2 months or 3 months, right?
Yeah.
When I had asked him, you know, what's a reasonable amount of time? Like, I go to the gym, I tweak my back, I do something. What's a reasonable amount of time for that to leave? And I thought he was going to say, you know, 4 weeks, 8 weeks, yeah, 12 weeks, whatever. Yeah. He actually said within a few days. And he's like, it might linger as much as a month, but he's like, probably within a few days. If you're not, he's like, the biggest telltale sign is going to be, are you gradually getting improvement? Because if it's tissue related,
yeah,
you will be getting improvement all the time, and then you'll be better.
Right.
It's like, if it sticks around, that's a good sign that your investigation's over, is a phrase he kept using on the interview.
Yeah, sometimes I've wondered about those acute injuries. This has been, my mountain biking has been a little bit more reckless this year, so I've crashed a lot more frequently. And I had one crash back in May when shortly after I'd returned from Italy, where I was also riding. I don't think I crashed as much there, but I crashed here, and it was at about, I don't know, 18 miles an hour, so not super, super fast, but fast enough that you wouldn't want to fall off the bike, and slammed to the ground, and I think I bruised ribs. Didn't break them, but probably bruised them. And usually with bruised ribs, I was accustomed to that pain lasting for a long time, 3-4 weeks at least. It passed within maybe 5 days.
Yeah.
And that was a little surprising. I was like, whoa, 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 did I overdo it on the TMS recovery? Am I like, you know, am I really fooling myself here? But maybe it's just that maybe you can recover pretty quickly from things. If you break a bone, you know, I imagine that's going to take several weeks. I mean, that's going to take a full 8 weeks or so to heal completely. I don't know quite as much about tendon damage, or if you like actually tore a muscle, how long some of that would take. But
well, a torn muscle and a complete detachment are different.
Yeah, yeah.
But complete detach. I mean, what I always think of is like walk into any grocery store and pick up a sirloin steak.
Yep.
And just grab it with your hands and try and do
it. And try and tear it.
Rip it in half. You can't do it. Like, it would be, you would need so much trauma or a really freak incident.
Yeah. That should put foam rolling out of the mind of everybody when they talk about releasing the fascia.
Right.
A physical therapist friend of mine, Derek Miles, who's at Stanford now, he would always talk about, like, he's like, if you think that a foam roller is going to quote unquote release your fascia, you've officially lost your mind.
Jim Prusak, the pain PT, would tell me, he said, you'd get more value out of taking the foam roller and beating against the wall with it to get out, you know, pent up energy than you would ever rolling on one. And so you can't really see it. There's a big clear plastic tub behind one of these motorcycles on the shelf below. There's probably $600 in mobility gear that's in that tub.
And I haven't. Kelly Starrett is very upset with you.
Yeah. Well, and his book is up there on the shelf behind you and hasn't been picked. His $60 book, The Supple Leopard. I feel like I trash him a lot on this show. It'd be cool to get him on.
I mean, like, I wouldn't mind challenging him directly, but he's smart enough that I think he'd probably respond to it positively. I mean, he definitely wants the best for people, so I think that's what matters.
Right. All right, well, let's see here. What's another good one? Okay, so I don't want to trash like other modalities, but I want to get your... Okay, so I'm laying down at least once a day. I'm just asking myself how I'm feeling and then meditating on it and allowing my feelings to come up. That's good. Doing meditations most days, even if it's just 5 or 10 minutes. Journaling when needed. EFT tapping most days, which is really helping. I've got my opinion on the tapping. What's yours?
I wouldn't do it, but that might just be a function of my not understanding it. It's not something that I'm in favor of because I don't, it seems like another external factor to avoid doing the actual internal thing. I think what's interesting about a lot of the questions that got asked was that I looked at them and I sort of looked at each individual point that people were making and said, this is a good question, this is a good question, a lot of good questions. And then I started trying to amalgamate the questions into a sort of, what are the common threads here and what's going on? A lot of it seems to revolve around, I'm stuck. Like, I'm not really getting as far with this as I thought that I should. And then there was at least one or two questions about like, okay, once I'm pain free, how do I maintain this? In the notes that I was writing down for this, because there's this, we talk a lot about the importance of getting to that point of acceptance. And one of the points that I've repeatedly make, and I'm sorry to bring it up again, when somebody's been really struggling to make the progress that they want to make, I frequently tell them, like, well, how deep into this are you going? Have you read Back Pain Permanent Healing, which, as we discussed the last time, was my favorite book by Steve Ozanich. And the reason why I mentioned Back Pain Permanent Healing is that it's so focused on getting into those aspects of the true self, which is where you can encounter some of those pretty dark, uncomfortable feelings when you start saying, like, oh, I do have this... desire to do this like horrible type of thing that I would never actually do, but what's wrong with me for having those feelings in the first place? And so the process of getting there, it got me thinking that when you go off to handle TMS, and you're like, okay, I've heard about TMS, and I accept that I don't have any physical injuries that are causing this pain. It makes sense to me that there's nothing structurally wrong with me, or all the doctors I've talked to, they can't really figure out what's going on. And they've either said, I have no idea, or they've given me these responses that don't seem to really click with me. So TMS makes sense. Now what? Then we tell you, okay, well, we need you to read the books. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and read the books by John Sarno, Steve Ozanich, Schubner, and Nicole Sachs, whoever else. And read those books. Okay, I read these books. Why am I not better? And then we have to say, like, well, it takes a little while for it to set in. And the reason why it takes a little while for it to set in is that effectively what you're doing is you're going on a sort of journey. And so I started looking at this and I was wondering, does this have anything to do with that hero's journey that Joseph Campbell talks about in The Power of Myth? And a hero's journey is something that applies to any of the great stories that you love, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, tons of comic books. It's why comic book movies and comic books are so popular, is because those are all about that hero's journey and how that works out and what that hero goes through. And a hero's journey basically consists of the call to take the journey in the first place. So you go off on this journey. There's probably a resistance to actually going that much further with the journey because you're afraid, you don't want to, you don't know if you can do it. And then you're making the journey, and then you come to the point of confrontation. And the confrontation you have is either with some dark, horrible force, or it's a dark, horrible force, and you relate to it, or it's common. It's something that you feel some sort of commonality with. Luke Skywalker and the dark side, right? So Luke Skywalker goes off and he gets all these powers, and then he finds out that, like, well, there's a dark side to it as well, and he starts to see aspects of the dark side, and he begins to discover how his father, Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader, succumbed to those dark side feelings and was ultimately destroyed by it. And he has this incredible struggle with it, you know, particularly in Empire Strikes Back, I guess, where he has to confront this dark side of himself, and how does he overcome that? And then he has to do it again in Return of the Jedi, where he's got the choice. He's like, okay, I can strike my father down in anger, or I can kill the Emperor in anger, I can do all of this. But if I do that, then I'm succumbing to the dark side. And so this is the conflict that exists with him internally. Well, it's going to be the same for you as well. It's just that it's not nearly as glorious. People aren't necessarily making movies about it, and it might feel incredibly selfish or petty or self-involved. And that can be a really difficult thing to deal with, to contend with, to admit to, because we generally, for as much as this culture might reward self-absorption, we tend not to like it in other people. It tends to be something that gets you criticized. So you might be very wary of being all that selfish or self-absorbed. I got to tell you that there's really nothing wrong with it, and that you've kind of got to go to those places and just be really, really, truly, deeply focused on yourself. Because frequently, if you've wound up suffering from TMS pain, you haven't really been that focused on yourself, not in the ways that you actually need to. So,
as you're bringing up the hero story, what I'm thinking of is I'm a big, I've never actually watched Star Wars. I've tried a couple of times.
You understand the concept though, right?
So what I was going to say is that a couple of years ago, I was seeing this therapist, and he was a Sarno advocate. He wasn't a follower. He wasn't a TMS therapist. It was just, I kind of hit the jackpot with finding a therapist that took my insurance, that was aware of the books and had read them and bought in and thought that it was all true.
Yeah, makes sense.
But he said that basically the Star Wars story is the most TMS-y thing ever. And I think about, there's the moment in Batman Begins, the Christian Bale
Batman's
series.
All about TMS.
Right.
I mean, Batman's all about that internal battle. I don't kill people, but I really want to.
Yeah, well, so he, when he's joining the League of Shadows and Liam Neeson's talking to him, and he says, you know, you've done everything you can do on the outside, so now it's time to journey inward.
Right.
And he says that that fear will cause people to do great or terrible things, and basically just talking about what's going on inside, and that's the stuff that you need to be able to get past in order to even be a member of the League. And so it's interesting. Adam says, I'm new to the group. Who are you guys?
Well, I had a good response to that.
You said, Eddie is an adult who runs a growing podcast about chronic pain and TMS. I'm a 40-year-old overgrown adolescent who moderates the group. But people seem to like that. One person in particular that I really liked had said, Brad, I will say the work of TMS has given me my humor and wit back, and that is saving my life too. Ozanich was very big on having the ability to like laugh at the absurdity of it all. I remember like pre-TMS, I laughed a lot. I laughed all the time. I found stupid shit was funny, really funny.
Everything's funny, right?
And then suddenly, maybe a lot to do with my career or the way that I saw it or the way that I saw my life, everything became now so serious. Everything was the worst thing in the world. It was a lot of hyperbole was really how I felt life was. This is either the greatest or this is the worst. There is no middle ground. And what's wild about that is if you saw me on the outside, I was Russell Wilson. I threw an interception. You didn't see me sweat. I threw a touchdown. You didn't see me celebrate. Everything was just even keel. So I'm curious and interested from the perspectives of the spouse of a person with TMS. What are some do's and don'ts for them? How could you best support the person with TMS as they go through TMS work? Say Shauna has TMS. What do you do?
Well, we talk about what's going on in as great as depth as we possibly can. You have to be patient about that conversation because there's the thing that's actually going on, and then there's all the stuff on top of it that you're going to think is actually going on. So it requires it requires attention and commitment like any good relationship does, right?
How can you, let's say that it was Shauna, and you know that a lot of this stuff that, like Nicole Sachs says with Journal Speak, write it and then burn it. You don't want anybody ever finding it. So you may love your spouse and you may love, you know, they're the love of your life, but inside of journal speak, you might thrash them.
Oh, and, God. Yeah, of course. Yeah, like, I'm sure people like do that.
Nicole
yeah.
says that in her journal, she kills off everybody in her life as if it's just a, you right. know, it's the Godfather movies, basically. Yeah. Kills them all off. But you would never know that because, you know, social media, she's talking about how much she loves them. And in real life, she adores them, right? But she knows this necessary side of her, evil Nicole, has to come out. So I guess how is it possible to be Jenny, I love you. Let's talk about what's going on and help unearth some of this stuff. But at the same time, likely a lot of that has to do with me.
Oh, probably.
So,
yeah.
And she's not going to be at liberty to share everything that is negative about me because, right. you know, that's like part of it. So I guess where's the balance?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think that's, you have to establish for yourself what you're okay with sharing. And I think when it comes to any relationship, you accept the fact that, like, your partner's not going to tell you everything, and they're not obligated to, and you've got to be okay with that. And you're probably not going to tell it. In fact, I know for a fact you're not going to tell everything to your partner as well, and that's fine. You know, Shauna doesn't really have TMS in any capacity at all because she's been into Jung and the shadow self for years at this point.
Yeah.
So she's really clear about all that stuff.
Will she, like, come on the podcast?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, she knows. Yeah. I think that she'd be great. She knows herself, you know, she knows what's there, and she knows sort of what, her edges and boundaries are. And she's gotten a lot of comfort with that. So then the question sort of becomes, like, how do you develop a comfort with that shadow self, with some of those deeper, darker aspects of you? And in the context of a relationship, you might have a really distinct fear that your partner might not be okay with certain realities about who you are. And if they found out that you felt had certain types of feelings or certain types of urges, that they would reject you. And with a good relationship, you have to trust each other that you're actually going to be there and accept one another. Acceptance is an ongoing, recurring theme of TMS recovery. Accepting yourself and accepting others and accepting the nature of relationship with them.
Well, I think it goes back to, you were saying something earlier that made me, it popped in my head, a quote that Dr. Arlene Feinblatt had. So she was the first psychologist that Sarno sent people to.
Yeah.
And I've interviewed her. She's been on the podcast before. But she says, really, like, all that TMS is all that we're talking about is feelings. And what your inclination to do when a feeling comes up or when a thought comes up is, don't think that, don't think that, don't think that. So you spend all this time,
right? Yeah, you saying, like, literally repressing it.
I can't think that. And she says, if you would step back and just allow yourself to think it or feel it, there's no reason.
And there's no reason not to.
Symptoms.
It's, you know what they say. I was listening to Jordan Peterson recently, who, I wonder what sort of hit I take to my reputation for saying that I listen to Jordan Peterson periodically, because some people really hate that guy. He's easily misrepresented. But one of the things that he says, he's like, you are not your problems.
Yep.
And you're also not, you're not strictly your emotions either. I mean, your emotions, you feel very close to them. How you feel about something can really feel like a core part of your identity. And having an awareness and an understanding and an acceptance of that identity and what it truly is one thing. Your emotions might have something to do with that, but they're not exclusively you. So you're not your problems and you're not your emotions. Just because you feel intense rage at your parents doesn't mean that you don't love your parents.
Right.
You
right.
know?
Right, exactly. And that it doesn't mean that that's the end of the story or the whole story.
Yeah, it doesn't end there. It's just part of it. I want to touch on that first question about why I can be such a prick, because we talked a little bit about how the anger does not help me, and I think I'm going to be contemplating that one for a long time, because I don't know if there's an easy answer to it. But in terms of why I can be a little blunt at times, because I don't think I'm really overtly mean to anybody, even though I might have that internal urge, like I always might have that, like, initial spark response, like, fuck you, right? But, you know, I'm not gonna. It's something that you learn not to indulge, because it's not particularly grown up. It's not particularly useful. So we're trying to do a couple things with the forum is that we want to create an environment in which people feel safe sharing what their actual emotions are. And since about mid-July, when there was a real point of tension with...
an uprising.
Yeah, certain things, understandably. But since then, and when I more clearly expressed what I was hoping people would do because it aligned to the process that we know that works, there is... Here's the thing about TMS recovery is that the books... And the videos and the websites that talk about it, they provide a good guide for how to go through the process of handling TMS and recovering from it. And if you do what that guide says, the guide can't do it for you. You can go through the motions, you can write things in a journal, you can meditate, you can do all these things. That on its own is not necessarily sufficient. So we have the group to sort of help supplement that. But there is a process. You read the books, you stop it with the physical treatments, and you stop seeking advice all the time. And you stop writing posts about, I think I've got TMS, I'm pretty sure I've got TMS, and then here's a whole slew of physical symptoms that I'm dealing with and why they're different and special. So is it really TMS? all of that stuff is a deviation from the process that we know works. When the process is read the books, do the emotional work. Sounds easy. I'm not trying to oversimplify it. Any deviation from that can cause a lot of problems because it just winds up being more and more distractions from doing the stuff that you need to do. So the reason why I get blunt is because I don't really have a whole lot of use for theatrical acts of compassion. This sort of like, I think the term Shauna used was a pity party, where it's these... seeking out of more advice, which translates into just like, okay, you know, one of the great things about chronic pain is that you can talk about it and you get people to feel sorry for you.
Yep.
And, you know, if you've got cancer or if you've got some sort of grievous injury, yeah, I really, really feel badly for you. When it comes to chronic pain, there's a limit to how much sympathy any of us really should feel for that. And the reason is because excessive amounts of sympathy validates that the pain is somehow more than what it is. There is a limit to what this pain is doing. It's not the result of any sort of physical disorder. It's not the result of any sort of structural abnormality. Any lingering on the pain or any assumption that just because the pain exists is indicative of the severity of a non-existent injury that you don't have just keeps it going on and on and on. And I want to move people away from the urge to do that and to focus on what they need to do, which is to really, truly, deeply engage with their emotions and with themselves.
Early on, I would get hate messages from people on Instagram that would, you know, I would post things, but this is a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. I would post things about Sarna or TMS or emotions that they cause chronic pain or whatever. And I'd get messages from people that were just so filled with hate about all the reasons I was wrong. And then I would go to their page, their Instagram, and their bio says something like, not all illnesses can be seen, chronic pain warrior, spoony. And they're like, every fifth picture is them at the doctor.
Right.
Getting another blood test. I don't know. You know, the last 27 came up negative for anything.
I think this notion of identity. Identity is an inescapable part of TMS. We talk a lot about childhood and the role that your childhood might play in TMS. Usually I find that there's something there that's leading to this physical pain decades later often. And people frequently, they don't want to get into their childhood. I didn't want to get into my childhood. I still have a trouble going back there and thinking about certain things. But the thing is that with TMS and the aspect of identity is that your upbringing, your experiences, how you were taught to handle those experiences, the examples that you saw from people at home and in your life in general, school, otherwise, whatever else, that adds up to the construction of a framework of how you think about what you see and how you conceptualize and rationalize what happens to you and how you feel about it. And that framework over a long enough period of time forms the basis of your identity, and you're going to be inclined to hold on to it at all costs. And that sense of consistency, being consistent with yourself and those constant familiarities, is really, really hard to let go of. And when you experience pain for a long enough period of time, pain also becomes another part of your identity. And it's a lot harder to let that pain go because it's been with you for so long. It might be uncomfortable, but it's familiar. And it's a hell of a lot better in a lot of ways to just feel that physical pain than actually have to come to what can be very, very unsettling realizations about who you are truly, as opposed to who you think you are.
You know, one of the more profound things that anybody's actually ever talked about on this podcast was when we did the first interview, and you started when you first had a bunch of pain, and then you started making lists of different things in your life. Pain went away, and then you relapsed.
Yeah.
And then it seemed like the moment where the corner was turned was sort of always having this outside image and wanted people to see you as Brad with the Guns N' Roses tank top and the beard and the tough guy exterior. Yep. And the tattoos and all this.
Yep.
That's how you wanted yourself to be seen in the world. That's what you are, tough guy Brad. And then challenging that,
yeah,
and saying that identity is not correct.
Yeah, that identity was not correct. That identity was flat out wrong. And there are a lot of other things that were flat out wrong too. In terms of realizations that I had about myself, I think that people asked about this, and I'm fairly comfortable with going into this, is that the aspect of toughness and the importance that I put on being a tough guy. last podcast, we talked about how I was a rower for, you know, a few years competitively. And rowing is a brutally painful sport, and I really took a lot of pride in the fact that I could do that sport as well as I could and endure the pain that went into it, into racing, and the discipline that went into the training with getting to the lake at, you know, 5:30 a.m. five mornings a week, and, you know, going through the cold and the rain and the heat and whatever else got thrown at me. I really put a lot of onus and importance on that. Before that, it was boxing, which is a little bit more conceptual than just pure toughness. There's a lot more depth there than you might think, but certainly that sense of being able to have power and to exert it and to resist being dominated by others, which quickly turns into a frequent desire to exert and have power over others as well. And when I look at that and being able to identify that those are feelings that I actually have, and those are urges that I've had, and to a certain degree I did act on them because I did used to go to a gym and we used to beat the shit out of each other. It was fun, but it was also kind of silly. And the time I spent rowing competitively and how I just like basically sacrificed almost everything else except for career in my life during that period as well. What was it that was actually driving the need to do those things, and to on top of which to lift weights and to build muscle and to get strong and to look strong and to, you know, shave my head and have the scruff and, you know, the blue jeans and the periods of wearing combat boots, which I still have, and all that sort of stuff. I mean, this is a really, really curated image. You know, it's just like, oh, you're just effortlessly yourself. You know, it's like, you're just pure id, man. I mean, I had people sold on that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you're just like Tyler Durden from Fight Club, right? You know, it's like, I would have people actually say that to me, and I got off on it. And I got off on it because, like, it was, I'm a designer as a profession. I designed my identity to be like that. It was a series of very intentional decisions every step of the way. But what was driving it? And, you know, I don't know that I've got all the answers as to what was driving it, but I think that it ladders back up to when I was really young and the way that anybody from a teacher or parent was with me and interpreting it for whatever reasons as some sort of rejection of who I am or some insecurity I had about being able to trust in others because I've got a very strong independent streak. So you got this really, really strong independent streak combined with like this obsession with brutal functionality and capability, you know, in terms of the physical fitness and the endurance and the strength and all of that. And I think that really does come back to a lot of just like oldest fears type of thing of like, I don't know if I can trust anybody. And my parents are great, you know. It's like there is no good reason here. Like, I mean, I've got a very good relationship with my parents now, and I have for a very long time, virtually my entire life.
But in the hero story, or I think of like the characters that we have grown up to see, John Wayne's, Stone Cold Steve Austin, right? Like, like these characters that, you know, they are don't trust anybody. They are tough
guy. We love that stuff in popular culture because, you know, it looks cool and it's got this sort of, you know, it represents a sort of freedom from rules and expectations, and freedom from responsibility, maybe. And we all know how I don't like responsibility. So, you know, another thing, again, 40-year-old overgrown adolescent. I mean, I'm kidding about that to a certain degree, but there's a certain amount of truth to it as well. So
what about how symptoms may increase both in number and severity as one becomes more aware of
this is, you know, this is the one that, like, we see this a lot, and the fact that we see that a lot is, in some ways, it's good because those symptoms increase in number and severity the closer you're getting to figuring it out. And we've got a lot of people who are, you know, it's like, yeah, you're really figuring it out. The thing is that, like, again, that subconscious part of you wants to hold on to the old ways. It prefers the familiarity. It prefers the consistency of what your identity had been. So it's going to make a really, really, really strong push to get its way.
The challenge is then people almost like reset.
And then you reset. And that's very easy to do. Is that like, oh, well, actually, no. It's because of an injury. Well, it's not. It's not. But one young woman had posted something that sounded really genuinely frightening with the horrific electrical shocks that she was feeling all over the place. But when we dug into that, she said that the medical professionals she went to see about it, they'd never seen anything like that before. It's like, well, if they haven't seen it, they've seen a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, this is just a really cruel instance of what gets called the symptom imperative.
Well, I mean, that always makes me wonder if medical professionals have never seen it. It seems like the majority of the people that are in these forums, myself included, have seen a dozen doctors or 20 doctors or 25 doctors.
Yep.
I mean, I'm sure that some doctors are better than others. In fact, we know that some are better than others.
Yep.
However, if you get two or three doctors in and they're still saying,
we have no idea what's going on.
I'm not sure.
It might be an L5,
right.
L4 herniation.
It could be L5, L4 herniation. Right. You could have IBS. You could have, I just don't know. I feel like at that point, like that's, should be enough.
That should be enough. And so I think we've touched on this in the forum sometimes, is that we bottom line, you have to go to a doctor at some point. We're not like this forum. I think we've got a couple of MDs on the forum, and they post some really good stuff. But they'd be the first to tell you, I can't diagnose you without properly evaluating and examining you in the first place.
What if they're nowhere near
if they're nowhere near
like when I think of where the bigger names exist, Dr. Hanscom used to be in Seattle. He's now in San Francisco. Dr. Schechter is in Southern California.
Yep.
Dr. Schubiner is in Michigan. Dr. Batson is in Tennessee. Dr. Gwatz is in New Jersey. I think there's one in Chicago.
There's one in Chicago, maybe a couple in New York.
If you're in Florida, you're in Texas, there's a lot of places where there's not.
If you're in a small town in Nebraska, you know, it's just like, You may not have access to a doctor who's registered on the TMS wiki, for instance.
But I mean, a part of me also wants to say that kind of the assumption of Sarno and a lot of doctors after that is, let's say Sarno would say 100%. If it's not an infection, if it's not a tumor, if it's not cancer and it's not a broken bone, then it's TMS. Even the doctors that are more conservative, like Schubiner and like Schechter, I think would say with a high degree of certainty, let's just call it 95%, 90 or 95%, that if it's not those four things, it's probably TMS/the nervous system/ something that can be solved with this stuff.
Yep.
So I feel like if you're in a small town or a place where it's not possible for you to get to a TMS doctor, if you can go get a simple blood test that'll tell you, hey, are your white blood cells fucked up? Do you have cancer? Can you
just go to Theranos? Oh, wait, that was too bad, so sad. No, yeah, but no, it's something simple. There is also this weird aspect of going to doctors that could potentially throw you off, in the sense that they might come back with something that they've identified,
right. Like
something that does have a name that's still TMS. I don't know what's coming to mind right now. I mean, I got told piriformis syndrome. That was my favorite one.
Well, thoracic outlet syndrome was the one that I got the most, which just by pure, I mean, all the descriptions of it. Now, armchair quarterbacking, I can go back.
And, yeah.
Like easier. Piriformis syndrome, right. You could say tension in the piriformis. Okay, we know that right. Word tension. And with thoracic outlet syndrome, it's tension in the scalenes, tension in the pecs, tension in the neck.
Right. Keyword here is
right.
Being tension.
And I don't remember any time before, like in that period of time where it was everything hurts and here's Dr. Sarno, that time in between.
Yeah.
I don't recall ever seeing the word tension. And now when I go back and I look at some of the things I would have been reading back then,
right.
Tension is everywhere.
Yeah, tension's everywhere, but you got to be looking for it.
Right.
And it's one of those things, it's really, really easy to overlook things and it's really, really easy to hear things that align with what your ostensible internal identity is. It's like, oh, that sounds familiar. I'm going to go ahead and believe that. We see this all the time. You know, we've got people on all sides, you know, on both sides of the political spectrum saying that, you know, the other side is completely full of it and doesn't understand what facts are. So, you know, we live in a world where we're understanding what the truth is very difficult. So we just kind of believe whatever we want to believe is the truth. And this is where it's tough, because if you want to believe that you have some sort of unique physical injury that is causing your pain and your problems, you can do that. You can find a way to support that. And so I will ask people who are sort of in that situation. I was like, well, you got a couple choices here. One choice is that you just live with chronic pain and you're just going to deal with it. The other choice is that you actually go and you deal with your emotions and you deal with yourself.
Here's the thing that I want to say on that too, is that, if those are the two choices and I say, yeah, I'm going to live with chronic pain and it just is what it is, and I just accept that, I almost feel like that could make a massive dent in how shitty you feel. Because that's not the inclination of people that are in pain. They'll say, I'm in chronic pain, but I'm still going to go see a doctor every week, or I'm still going to go and do these other
modalities. So they're not accepting their pain.
Right. And so when my shoulder was all fucked up, and I remember like I had dislocated, and then there was 2 or 3 months where I just felt like I was fighting with doctors in the area to get me to an MRI, give me a different diagnosis, let me see the imaging, let me see this. And then as soon as I saw a doctor that said, yes, you have this problem, but you can continue to do what you love, and if you want to get surgery, get surgery, but you're not going to hurt anything by continuing to do what you love, and you're going to be okay. Like the pain went from like an 8 to like a 1.5 or like a 1.
It's amazing how that works, right?
Amazing how that works, because I had just sort of... oh, okay. Well, this is what it is, and that's okay. And I didn't see another doctor after that. And I think it just, you know, that sort of just accept and stop fighting shit, and it just
so
is
in that
what
sense,
it is.
We really should present it as you got two choices. You can just go ahead and accept the physical pain, and there's actually probably, you know what, there's probably pretty good reason to go down that route. I know that one thing that Ozanich talks a lot about is the notion of don't continually seek more books, seek out more form advice. I mean, the advice seeking will, I mean, that's a dead end after a while.
Well, there was somebody earlier today that you piped in, but this person had asked about another book.
Yeah, we were chatting about
it. And this person throughout the day today as we record this had probably posted or asked me 10 different questions about something. And that's why I finally had just replied with, why are you?
Yeah, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
What are you trying to get here? And when, you know, I didn't see the earlier post, or maybe I was just looking on the wrong forum for this. I don't think the other forums would have me. When I asked her about where she was in the journey, I always want to know where somebody is in the journey with this. And she's relatively new. And the thing is that you can be relatively new. It's pretty confusing.
Mm-hmm.
It can be really confusing, particularly like she had something that was like popping in her leg, I think, you know, it was like popping sound. Well, you know, the popping sound is nothing.
If you go to my CrossFit gym at 5:30 in the morning and we do the air squat warm-ups, and there's 20 people in cracking. Class, yeah, 18 of them have that.
Yeah, everybody's got it. But I mean, she might have it, you know, throughout the entire day. That is going to reinforce this notion, there's something going on. There's this noise. I hear it. Like, how can you tell me that this is mentally generated? And like, well, it is. But then when we got into it, you know, we said, I was like, look, how long has it been since you actually had an injury to this body part? And she's like, oh, it's been a couple months. It's healed.
Yeah.
And then when she heard that, she's like, okay, now I'm starting to get it. And so this is where some of those discussions on the forum can be useful. I don't feel comfortable giving medical advice. I probably skirt a little bit too close to it in some of the discussions that we've got, but I do want to give people a space to sort of explore if they're early on into it. Obviously, I do get fairly frustrated when people have been at this for over a year. And it's like, okay, well, you've been seeking advice for over a year, and you're not really... Anytime we ask you to talk about feelings, you disappear, and you don't talk about the feelings. That's usually a pretty good sign that you're not really doing the actual work that needs to be done. Yeah.
What about concept on journaling? What has been your experience that works best? Dig in the past or focus on the current? I'm a big proponent of focus on the current. If there is to be journaling, but again, to me, journaling and current emotions, like we can have emotions that are tied to stories, but if the whole idea is that we're feeling feelings and that we're experiencing emotions, then to me, that's not writing anything. I can't, maybe it's just my brain, I can't experience a emotion and write at the same time.
Yeah, and I don't think everybody can. So this is... I think what's interesting about the journaling type of thing is that, like, as human beings, we look for declarative instructions for how to handle complex things. Everybody does this, and it's totally natural. You don't know how to do something. You want to have clear steps about how you, okay, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to know that I'm done when I get to this point, and then I move on to the next step, and then I go through and I do these things, and I get to the next step, and I do it, and do it.
Well, we're a prescription culture.
Yeah, of course we are. It's because humans are, it works for us. Particularly works in a world that's very confusing and wrought with chaos. So we like having those clearly defined antidotes. And one of the key risks with journaling is that you treat it as something that you go through the motions on. You treat it as a step in the process. It is, but it's also not. What we're really driving towards is this overall sort of, you know, I'm sorry to say it, vaguely conceptual sense of acceptance of what's going on in your life and acceptance of who you truly are. And there really isn't a process that guarantees that will work, yet you still have to go through and do certain types of things. What we talk about when we're talking about journaling is that journaling is put in the place of journaling just expressing and labeling your emotions in the first place. Some people have a real aversion to doing this at all. They feel like they can't write. They don't feel comfortable with it. They don't want to do it. Everybody's got time, especially if they say that they don't. And so I'll say, just write down one thing and attach an emotion to it, because you probably haven't done that in a very long time if you're telling me that you don't know how to start. And that's totally understandable. We don't necessarily do the best job of teaching people how to work through their feelings. And then we've got, you know, this huge sort of toxic positivity culture that says erase negativity from your life, which is just death for people. I mean, that is just gonna kill you. You know, then you're gonna feel guilty about like having normal human emotions. Like, that's not any good. But if you don't label your emotions, then you're gonna have a harder and harder time feeling them in any meaningful type of way. So your journals don't have to be these works of literary art. But I think you got to do something that gets some separation between you and the feeling that you've got, because again, you are not your emotions.
I see journaling as a vessel simply to drum up emotions to feel.
Yeah, that's
so you get the separation out on paper. Hanscom's talked about this. He's like, I don't know what it is about neuroplasticity that does this, but something about the separation of getting it onto paper. There's something to that.
Something to that.
And to me, what I think it is that if I can write something down and interpret it, have some comprehension around it, it's going to hopefully emit emotion that I just haven't been able to
get out. Haven't been able to tap into, really. There's a process of being able to articulate parts of yourself that you've never articulated here.
Because kids got it on automatic, like you said earlier. When I pick Zoe up from school every day, one of the first things I ask her is, how are you feeling today?
Right.
And she'll say sad, and she'll tell me what happened. And every once in a while, she may drum up tears, or she may, you know, but like, how many times can you ask an adult, how are you feeling today? And they will say one of the core sad, anger, fear, rage. You'll say, how are you feeling today? And they'll say, oh, I'm busy.
Yeah, busy, which is the ultimate distractive response, because it's so meaningless and hollow.
The ultimate repression.
It's just like, you're busy. What does that mean?
So the next person asked about eating disorders, and you said you weren't qualified to talk about that. I'm actually going to touch on binging and overeating, because I feel like it's the equivalent of pain. Some people choose to overeat and binge. And I think that from a physiological perspective, when you are in fight or flight, or your nervous system's amped up, which is being caused by repression, your cortisol levels are up, and you're not able to lose weight the way that you want. I think that to me, also, even when you're just over, I've heard from a bazillion people that will be fighting this concept of losing 20 pounds. They count their food, they get in 2 hours of the cardio machine, and then they weigh in and they're 0.5 pounds higher. What happened? And I just think it's you're fighting.
Yeah, fight or flight.
Whereas like, I seem to get in the best shape possible when I dial it back, and I'm just like 3 to 4 cash days in the gym, and then I walk in and I'll snatch 200 pounds no problem, as opposed to beating the shit out of myself 5 days a week for, you know, 7 months on a cycle. But I thought it was interesting, somebody had replied and said, my line of thinking is this: those that suffer from anorexia have the same exact personality profile as someone who suffers from TMS. They're a perfectionist, overachiever, do-gooder, people-pleaser, controlling. It's triggered by events that one may define as trauma as a child or an adult. For me, it was having an extreme fear of rejection brought in by various events resulting in feeling out of control. The one thing I could control was being the best at being thin or over-exercising or food restriction. And a lot of it is about control. I certainly see that.
Yeah, that control is, I think that when you're dealing with any sort of fear or confusion in your life, which can, I think fear and confusion can accompany any sort of transitional, you know, periods of transition, periods of change. Control is one of the quickest ways to counteract that. And you will seek to control that which you can control.
The next person, I think you've pretty much touched on these. I'll see if you want to get any additional thoughts, but opinions on why some people get stuck. You talked about that a little bit earlier. And then interested in further advice of accepting versus ignoring pain. And I talked a second ago about my shoulder, and once I just accepted that it is there and it is what it is, my pain didn't vanish, but it drastically reduced.
Yeah, I think that the acceptance route that you took there made a lot of sense. Now, what does it mean to accept? There might be some confusion about what that actually means. And you know, off the top of my head, I'm not sure that I'm the best person to really define it. Ignoring it, I can say, well, we can tell you to ignore your pain. It's like, how can I ignore that which I'm feeling so presently and so hideously? I can't ignore it. And we say, like, well, you need to ignore it. Well, no. I mean, we know that you can't ignore it. I think, was it Alan Gordon in Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Alan Gordon has a good, he has a great approach to dealing with, like, that pain that's just sort of there. You know, when you get some that flares up and then it sort of lingers for a little bit. It's like, don't let it affect your mood.
Yeah.
And that is, you feel like, well, I can't. Well, yes, no, you can. Is that you look at the pain and then you have to say, it's just like, oh, well, I must be testy about something. It's really flaring up. Doesn't feel too good. Not really too pleased with that. But, yeah, not really much I can do about it. I've got a lot going on today. I'm not going to let it ruin it for me. That would be silly.
Jeanette Barber from the Rosie O'Donnell Show and The View, who I had on when she was on that 2020 special that aired in the late 90s. And after she had been cured entirely from sarno, after she'd been in a wheelie cart for 5 years.
5 years at least,
And then was cured a week after Sarno's lecture and being seen by him, she had her ankle
swell up, have all these issues, all this kind of stuff. And she had said that they made her come in on a Sunday, and that she said, I must be testy. And she's like, as soon as I basically said that, that it must be testy, exactly how you said it, said that that went away.
Yeah, it's like, and I think what can be frustrating for people, though, is that they really want it to go away right away. I'm like, yeah, I do too, but it's not always going to do that. But, you know, just because it doesn't go away immediately doesn't mean that it won't eventually. So that's another thing you have to sort of accept. It's like, yeah, this might just take a little while to set in, and that's okay. And, you know, to a certain degree, you got to look at stuff and say, it's like, okay, no, it'll be all right. And I think that being able to reassure yourself is really important. Again, my independence streak might be a little excessive, but I do believe pretty strongly that at some point there's a part of this journey with TMS recovery where you really are, you're doing it on your own, and it's exclusively you.
We've got about 25 minutes left on this SD card, so we got a lot to get through still. So this person asked a question, and then Shauna said plus one. So we really need to make sure we address this.
Yeah.
They want pointers or recommendations to stop fear cycles from ramping up when you get flares.
Okay, so how is it that you can stop the fear cycles from ramping up when you get a flare-up?
Like if I walk over there and I pick up that black box and my back twinges.
Yeah, you get the back twinge.
In the same spot that I had the worst of my pain, which is my mid-back, particularly on the right side. That was always my spot. How do I stop myself from saying, Eddie, like, there it is. You know what I mean?
Oh, this
like
time
that,
it's an injury.
Right.
Yeah, this time. Well, first off, don't tell yourself it's an injury. You know, that's something that you have to practice, and the more you don't want to do it, the more you have to do it. Because twinges will invariably happen. My relapse last year was a result of exactly that, and deadlifting, not even that much weight, but enough weight that, you know, you kind of have to pay attention to it, and got that flare up, and
that black box is 7 pounds. You think you'd pick that up?
Yeah, you'd be amazed. Well, you know, it's one of those funny things, though, is that, like, I remember when I was doing training at Jim Jones in Salt Lake City, back when they were cool. Well, I guess they still kind of are, but they would get real strict with how you picked up light things, like, you know, like little, you know, 10-pound medicine balls, that sort of thing. It's like, well, you know, if you don't pick those up right, that's when you tweak your back. I'm like, you know, looking back, obviously, it sounds insane, but I've seen that happen with people that they bend over and then they're like, oh, I threw my back out. I'm like, oh, no, actually, you didn't. And it's understandable, but when that happens, when you have those really sudden, scary, immediate flare-ups, you've got to respond to that by saying, it's like, this is a TMS flare-up. You have to label it for what it is, because it's exactly what it is. This is a TMS flare-up, and this is how my mind gets me to stop paying attention to something else. But I'm not angry about anything else. Well, maybe you're not.
I'm making sure that I have the house nice and cold before I go to sleep. I set it to 68, which drives my wife nuts.
We love it cold.
Yeah, so no. I wish it was a we love it cold. I love it cold. My oldest daughter hates it. My wife hates it. Let me read. Okay, any insight from either of you into why someone would keep getting a flare up occurring every other day? It's like clockwork now.
Oh,
I can't figure out why.
Yeah, he's got it going up and down. Like, yeah, it's like, I'm good one day, and then it's
second day my neck gets cranky as fuck, but yet always goes back to almost normal the following day. So basically, my weeks are 50% good and 50% bad.
Yeah, so that's got to be super frustrating, right? Because it's like, I've got this. Oh no, I don't. Symptom imperative, classic case of it.
And you're expecting it. Alan Gordon would say outcome independence, meaning like that. If you know you're probably gonna, let's say that today was a good day as you listen to this. You know tomorrow's probably going to be a bad day. You have to accept it.
Yeah, you got to say it's like, well, tomorrow might be a bad day, but you know what? It's just what my mind is doing to me right now. I know it's going on, but my subconscious hasn't caught up to it, and I need to be patient about that. Not easily done. I'm not saying that this is easy to do, but I'm saying that you have to do this.
This is from Shauna again, who, by the way, to me, looks almost like an Icelandic princess. She kind of reminds me of Elsa, actually.
Oh, from Frozen.
Profile picture, yeah.
Nice.
Can you guys talk about changing the group info into something that actually summarizes what the group's about? The safe space ish seems to attract a lot of pity party mongers. You kind of touched on that earlier.
Yeah, I kind of touched on that earlier, but it really is the purpose of this group is ideally to be a place where people can talk about the process of going through handling really, really difficult emotions or really, really difficult relationships with parents. We haven't gotten a whole lot about relationships with children. This is stuff that might be very difficult to talk about elsewhere. You may not be seeing a therapist. You may not want to see therapists. I'm fine with that. We want the group to be for that. I will get on people's case if they show up and they haven't read the books. It's like, okay, you're not doing the first thing that you have to do. I will not get on anybody's case at all, and I would vociferously defend anyone from any attack if they were to post something about confusing feelings that they've got. That is, I think, one of the key purposes of the group. And then another one is to share those success stories. I went through this. This is what my journey looked like. And these are my symptoms. And this is how they resolved. That repetition of seeing that it works for other people, eventually, I think that comes to stick.
Yep.
Yeah.
So many people have cited the Wiki success stories section as being so pivotal for them. But yeah, I feel like it's not a place where a lot of people will go. There's also...
Yeah, these days, I don't think people go there.
There's also... thankyudrsorno.org,
yeah,
I think is what it is. But it's before he passed away, people were writing letters for 15 years of all these amazing things that they're doing and how they've resolved their... Like, go there. I remember one day, really early on, I literally read every single one, and it took like 4 hours to read them all. But it was just these crazy stories of like... I mean, I just kept thinking like, I'm sitting here with some back pain, and that's more or less undiagnosed. It's, you know... Could be thoracic outlet syndrome. It could be this, could be that. But like, this guy has 9 disc herniations, and they're showing the image. You know, he's got spinal stenosis, or he's had failed cervical fusion surgery, all this kind of stuff. And his pain completely resolved by addressing his emotions. You know, but it's just like a lot of those stories were blowing my mind. And a lot of early on, it was going to Amazon and just reading the reviews.
Yeah, you read the reviews. There's a lot. I mean, there is stuff out there. I do urge seeking out some of the success stories. Where that gets interesting is when somebody starts thinking that what they've got just isn't covered by any of the success stories at all. It's like, well, I've got pain, but it's different than your pain. It's like, well, every case is a unique case.
Yeah, let me actually say this. I'm not an I don't feel like I'm abrasive, and but the one thing that I don't really tolerate at all, if somebody comes on and says, my symptoms are this, this, and that, who's had this? Because everybody's is different. And
yeah, Schubiner, different.
Schubiner in his interview talked with me quite a bit, and it's in the interview, and by the time you hear this, his would have already aired, but talking about how symptoms will be given to you in the place that's basically going to fuck up what you love the most.
That makes sense.
So for me, it was... Yeah. A weightlifter, and it's my shoulder, and then the shoulder heals, and then I'm working literally on getting my back bigger and all this kind of stuff with doing, you know, strict pull-ups or whatever, and then my back seizes up.
Yeah, that's when it seized up in the first place.
So. And I'm like, you know, and then my shoulders and my arms get tingly when I'm in the position of riding my motorcycle. He's like, think about all these things. Like, it's literally just taking away everything.
Yeah,
you
just
love.
Took everything. And you know, there's an interesting thing you can do. One thing I didn't spend a whole lot of time on it is that, like, I think in the TMS, like, you know, there's like this TMS wiki program, and you follow it for 6 weeks, and I, you know, half-assed it like I do with everything else. but one of the exercises that was pretty cool is like, write down everything that you dream of doing that you'll do when you're pain-free. And I couldn't even walk. With the back pain that I had, you know, from my non-existent injury, that was nonetheless debilitating. I mean, I could barely walk. And so I wound up writing down a lot of things about how I wanted to go back to Death Valley or the Grand Canyon and, you know, hike it, just to hike it again and do these things that I hadn't done before. Because there is sometimes it can be helpful to supplement this process with some more positive things so that you're not exclusively in the realm of the negative. But let's be real about this. Most of what's gotten you here, all of what's gotten you here, is probably some sort of negative, bad, unpleasant, unacceptable types of feelings. But being able to that act of being able to truly move on with things is really crucial.
That, hey, this thing happened. But
this thing happened. I'm gonna go through it. Like, you know, when you look at the hero's journey again, big part of the hero's journey is a reluctance to do it. I don't know if Batman ever went through a phase of not wanting to be Batman, but Batman absolutely goes through phases of not really wanting to do anything helpful.
Well, he was big in that Batman's just a symbol and anybody can be him.
Yeah, anybody could be him, right. So. Yeah. But there are some differences. So you can have these, you know, sometimes what you're dealing with is just a resistance to getting started in the first place.
What about... I'd be interested to hear how ego plays a role in TMS and recovery for you. Yep. I haven't heard or read anything on it. And it might be more specific to athletes and artists. As a dancer and athlete, I always saw myself as pretty badass, or at least wanted to believe that I was, maybe as a defense for some deeper insecurity.
She already figured out, like...
this right. is where my perfectionist side shows, pushing myself physically when my life basically stopped from TMS overnight, and I had to re-examine this whole identity. And in some ways, it was very humbling, and I focused on other aspects of healing relationships. I guess now that I'm slowly getting back to myself, I do all the activities that I used to do. I see that wanting to be Superwoman coming back. It motivates me, but it also scares me. I know Brad mentioned about his recovery, looking at who he really was and not the image of who he thought he was, and then authentically accepting this. This is huge for me. Sorry for rambling, but I thought this could be an interesting topic with you too. So there's a couple things that come to mind for me personally. And so there's a funny... I don't love memes. I really hate inspirational memes. Actually.
I hate inspirational memes, yeah.
And there's a couple of people sometimes that will post these kind of things over and over and over. And I'm like, I don't need an inspirational meme. Get it out of my face. But there's a funny one that is, it's a muscle standing there. And I think it's a muscle, a ligament, and a tendon.
Yep.
And the muscle's saying, let's get really, really big. And then the tendon and ligament are like, nope. Because, you know, sometimes like some of these dudes that... go when they take a ton of steroids as an example, but their frame was not really built to handle all that mass.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe they end up getting some kind of an injury, or they make themselves more susceptible to an injury.
Right.
I don't know. That's one of the things that I think about, where it's like, it's almost like too big for your britches. And I remember when I was rehabbing my shoulder, and I was like, I've got to do my rehab 2 to 3 times per day, and I'm still going to get in the gym 5 days a week, because when I get back, I'm going to be the bigger, stronger, you know, more jacked, more like Bane, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But really, if I can just sit back and say, like, you're 5'6", you're 165, like, are you going to go to the world champion? Like, do you need to take this stuff so seriously?
Yeah, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to prove?
And so, you know, that's something to consider as well.
Yeah, I mean, I really, she posted that, and I was like, well, I think you've pretty well figured this out. But sometimes when you're sort of new to the realization, you're new to the discovery, maybe the thing there is really to just reiterate. It's like, no, you've got it. You know what's happening. In terms of feeling the urge to be Wonder Woman again, and to be, you know, the badass and to be awesome, she's recognizing what's going on there. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. You just need to be aware that, like, okay, I have this urge. Why do I have this urge? Maybe it's some deep-rooted insecurity. Have you resolved that insecurity? It doesn't really matter if you have or if you haven't. And spend the rest of your life trying to resolve insecurities.
But I don't even know. I don't think that she needs to resolve it. I think understanding that it's there. And that
just understand. Yeah, I mean, that's my point. Is like, you don't have to. Big part of TMS is I need to fix everything. Fix, fix, fix. And you know what? You can't. That's okay.
Oh, she just posted 13 minutes ago. She said, Brad, you're probably with Eddie right now. It's very interesting because although there are a ton of other stressful things going on in my life at the time, I did have a dance performance a month prior to the onset of pain that I practiced my ass off for, but wasn't that happy with the results. I don't think I'll ever process that, and really felt disappointed. I'll think about that question you asked me and PM you when I get a chance in the next year.
Yeah, well, and she definitely should. I know that, you know, one of the things that triggered TMS for me was track cycling, and I went to Los Angeles to do an event that I had been preparing for, and of course this was in my mode of like, I need to be the best and prove to everybody that I'm the best, and I'm gonna whatever. And I went and I did the event, and I did very poorly in it, and it was extraordinarily upsetting. It was very sad, made me very sad, and it was the back pain started emerging, you know, a couple weeks later. After that,
my gym, Industrious, they're very Orange Theory Fitness, where the heart monitor, they have a big screen that shows the number of points you win, the number of calories you burn, and I wore that thing for a few months, and then
I was like, I just got to take this thing off. And I would tell my couple of friends that are there, I'd say, like, this thing is killing me because it's having me be far more competitive on this thing that I just want to enjoy.
You just want to enjoy it. Just have fun with it. You know, it's funny. When I was in Italy, I was with these really good mountain bikers. So I'm going to do a quick tangent and talk about the tank top. So the first day of riding in Italy, I came out with a tank top on, and my buddy Johnny Blair was like, he's like, well, sun's out, guns out for you, I guess. I was like, yep. And then I did this every day wearing the tank top.
Yeah.
So I told him, I'm trying to get him on the TMS train right now as well. And I told him that, cause we joke about tank tops a lot. I told him I was going to wear the Guns N' Roses tank top for this interview, and we'll get a photo of that. But, in Italy with all these really, really good mountain bikers, of which I am not one. And one of the guys, probably one of the fastest guys I've ever seen on a mountain bike, I asked him if he raced. I asked him if he did any downhill racing. And he was like, no, never really got into it. Never really felt the need. And I was like, of course you wouldn't. Because these people are, generally speaking, incredibly chilled, because you have to be very chilled out and very relaxed and centered in order to do the sort of terrain that really difficult downhill mountain biking comes with. Me, not being very good at this, I, of course, because I still have that competitive angle in me, did do some downhill racing in the past. I did very badly at it. And I told him, I was like, you know, you should do it. And the reason you should do it is not because you'd win, which he would win by a long shot. I was like, you should do it because it's interesting the mode that it puts you in. It's like it's transformative. It's just like you experience the trail in a completely different way, and do the competition for yourself. And so don't do it to dominate somebody else. Again, I know that I've got this urge deep within me to prove that I'm more powerful or better or whatever than other people. And it's bullshit and silly and it's kind of useless. I'm aware that that urge is there. And I am aware that, like, you know, my approach to competition can be to fulfill on that. But competition still does this really cool thing where it's just like it puts you in a certain type of zone. And I think that is absolutely worth it in terms of the awareness and experience that you can have from it. So I hope that he does race at some point, because it's just different. It just changes things in a way that you wouldn't expect.
This is the last one, and then we're going to wrap up. How to work with constantly moving pain, moving from shoulders to neck to eyes to head to bed or to the back of the head, shoulders again within a time frame of minutes to hours every day. So I'm just going to say that it doesn't matter, that it moves, and you can do a couple of things. Alan Gordon's big on what he calls somatic tracking. So I talk about feeling feelings internally. You can think of this the same way, almost like you close your eyes and you imagine, let's say that it's in your right shoulder. You're imagining your right shoulder. Then it moves to the left shoulder. You're imagining your left shoulder. And my whole thought on that is that you're staring down a threat. And if you were walking in the wild and you saw a tiger and you ran, the tiger's going to run after you and fucking kill you. If you see a tiger in the wild and you're looking at it, like dogs can sense fear, as an example. If you're walking down the street and there's a couple of pit bulls that are behind a fence that I'm not pit bull averse, but I'm just saying any dog in general, they can smell the fear, right? So if you run away from them or they have that sense that you're afraid, that's one thing. If you stare them down and show that you're comfortable, they're probably not going to bark. Just going to back off. And I see this the same way.
Yeah. So what I would say to that is that, like, that is classic, again, symptom imperative. Think about this logically. If you've got pain within the span of minutes, moving from your right shoulder to your left shoulder, okay. Did you really injure your left shoulder that quickly? No, of course not.
Yeah.
You definitely didn't. When it's moving around that rapidly and that intensely, that means that you've caught on to what's going on and that your mind is fucking with you again. And that's what symptom imperative is. When you get to this point, don't worry about it. Don't get scared. Celebrate it, because it means that you're getting to the end of this.
Brad, that's all the time we got. So we're going to do a selfie, and then this will come out in a couple of weeks because I got to go the fuck to bed.
Yeah. Awesome.
So,
all right, thanks for the questions, everybody. As always, it's a pleasure to do this.
Well, maybe we'll do this like quarterly or something. And I think it's been 8.5 months or 8 months since the last one. Yeah, so maybe we'll do it a little bit more frequently. But thanks, everybody.